Hello and welcome to volume 45, number 45 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 7th of November 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Andrew and Alison. And in the news this week, Starbucks is coming to Bradwell, the Port of East Anglia reveals its plans, and another Hopton holiday village is named the best. Details of these and many other local stories in just a while. Plus, Grapevine Extra with Andrew on Dr. Livingstone and Alison on Remembrance Day. Before all that, we have a birthday to celebrate. Sunday, the 9th of November, sees Edward Bates, manager of the Yarmouth Vision Norfolk Hub, celebrating his annual milestone. And so, from all your friends at Grapevine, have a great day, Edward. OK, without further ado, let's welcome Andrew and, coincidentally, the aforementioned Edward's mother, Alison, with the first part of this week's local news.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Grapevine on this, I have to say, nice mild November afternoon, November already. Hope you've all enjoyed your Halloween and your bonfire. I'm here with Alison again this afternoon.
Hello, everyone.
And we've got plenty of news for you today. So without further ado, Alison's going to start us off.
A £70 million investment into Norfolk's largest port will support 300 jobs in the region. Great Yarmouth's port, which was recently renamed the Port of East Anglia by operator Peel Ports, is set to undergo a major expansion requiring hundreds of workers within the supply chain. Peel Ports announced a fresh £10 million investment into the northern terminal last week, after earmarking £60 million to expand the southern terminal at the Outer Harbour earlier this year. The expansion will enable the port to support major energy projects across the region, including the construction of offshore wind farms, the Sizewell C nuclear power station, and future hydrogen and carbon capture technology at Bacton Gas Terminal. Richard Goffin, Port Director at Peel Ports for the South East, said the combined £70 million investment will support up to 300 jobs in construction, operations and maintenance. We believe the northern terminal will support around 100 indirect jobs and 200 at the southern terminal, he said. We're positive about AR7, positive about the investment that has been committed to Sizewell C. We've got Bacton, which is a unique asset on our coast just north of Great Yarmouth. We have confidence that the market and investment are there, which is why we're investing to support the growth of the sector in the region. The redevelopment of the port's northern terminal will help accommodate the next generation of North Sea offshore wind projects. Plans for the southern terminal include a new deep water terminal and will see the addition of 350 metres of quay, a roll-on-roll-off ramp, a heavy lift pad and approximately 10 hectares of outdoor storage space. Kevin Keeble, chairman of the East of England Energy Group, the EEEGR, said this significant £70 million investment will enable the port to cope with bigger wind projects, bigger turbines, longer blades and larger infrastructure. It's important to remember that the UK's energy transition is going to take 30 to 40 years and we need to continue to support the gas industry. But in terms of positioning the region as a leader in renewable energy, we must continue to see investment like this.
Following on from that, I've got another item here which is about the region's energy sector and features quotes from Mr. Keeble. He says the region's energy sector has urged the government to rethink the budget it has made available for future offshore wind products, warning the limited allocation risks, quote, holding the industry back. Labour has revealed that it will allocate £1.08 billion for offshore wind farms for its latest renewable energy contracts auction. But experts warn the purse will only cover about a quarter of the capacity for this year's tender. Kevin Keeble, the aforementioned chairman of the East of England Energy Group, fears the region could lose out on billions of pounds of investment in North Sea projects, with thousands of jobs on the line. The East of England's energy supply chain has the people, the ports and the proven capability to deliver the UK's next generation of offshore wind. But the AR7 budget risks holding the industry back at a crucial moment, he warned. With more than 20 gigawatt of projects ready to compete, the limited budget could secure as little as 3 to 5 gigawatt of capacity, which is a long way from what's needed to meet the government's 2030 targets. This isn't about asking for more subsidy, he said. It's about unlocking existing investment. More than £50 billion of private capital is ready to flow into UK projects, ports and manufacturing, much of it through Norfolk, Suffolk and Essex, creating thousands of skilled jobs and securing supply chain resilience at home. In terms of jobs, this lack of continuity could have long-term damaging effects. Ahead of a bidding window this month, the Energy Department, DESNZ, has confirmed £900 million will be made available to fixed-bottom wind projects, with a further £180 million for floating schemes. That's turbines mounted on floating platforms rather than fixed to the seabed. We don't want to see a missed economic opportunity with shovel-ready projects standing idle and our regional suppliers waiting for clarity, Mr. Keeble added. The East of England is ready to deliver. We now need policy to match the ambition and the pace of the industry. Well, that's very interesting to hear two views on that. It looks like the port will flourish. Let's hope this money flows in as well to help everything else flourish.
Let's hope so. It was a busy bonfire night for fire crews in Norfolk. Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service attended 16 incidents between 5 p.m. on Wednesday and 3 a.m. on Thursday, when Guy Fawkes Night celebrations were underway across the county. In total, 10 of these were described as fires in the open, and another one described as a grass fire. The fires in the open locally were located in Hemsby, Galston and Winterton-on-Sea, while the only grass fire was in Cossey. The fire service previously urged people to be careful while they were out and lighting bonfires, fireworks and sparklers. On Wednesday morning, they posted on Facebook, "Happy bonfire night, everyone. Whether you're going out or staying in, make sure you're staying safe." Bonfire night is one of the busiest nights of the year for our firefighter crews, and we're advising going out to local displays as the safest way to enjoy the night.
Staying with the emergency services, an ambulance struggled to make its way to a patient due to irresponsible parking in the village of Caister. The incident happened after 3 p.m. on Monday, November the 3rd, at the playing field in Caister, where double parking is a recurring problem, especially during school drop-off times. Kevin Wood, chairman of Caister Parish Council, has expressed dismay after the emergency saw a customer at the Rabbit Hutch Cafe need medical attention, but the ambulance, quote, really struggled to get to the patient because of irresponsible parking. This could easily have escalated and the patient could have been at risk, he said, adding that some people's parking is extremely disappointing. He warned villagers about the problem 3 weeks ago in a public post on the Parish Council's Facebook page. "I ask people to show some courtesy when parking," he said. "The message is clear. If the car park spaces are full, leave and drive to Beach Road car park, which is only a 5-minute walk away. Do not double park. You're putting children and others' safety at risk. Please think no double parking, no space, and drive off. I'm just hoping for some common sense," he added. Both the East of England Ambulance Service and the Rabbit Hutch Cafe have declined to comment on the incident. The Parish Council has previously expressed concerns over the condition of Beach Road car park and the fees charge, clashing with Great Yarmouth Borough Council, which owns the facility. Elsewhere in the village, the car park on the High Street recently reopened, with the neighbouring East of England Co-op taking on the lease from Norfolk County Council, after it had been closed for 4 months.
Haven's Hopton Holiday Village near Great Yarmouth has been named the AA Holiday Park of the Year for 2025 at the Caravan and Campsite Awards, one of the most prestigious accolades in the tourism and leisure sector. The top prize is awarded annually to one UK holiday park that demonstrates excellence across all areas, from the quality of accommodation and guest experience to sustainability and innovation. Recognised for its outstanding facilities, exceptional guest and owner service, and focus on continuous improvement, the Norfolk Park impressed AA inspectors with its immaculate grounds, amenities and atmosphere. Inspectors also commended the holiday village on its coastal location in the seaside resort of Hopton-on-Sea in Norfolk, close to the border with Suffolk. It has sea views and natural countryside surroundings, alongside amusements, a swimming pool, climbing, arts and crafts, bike and cart hire. Jonathan Stratford, General Manager at Haven Hopton Holiday Village, said, "We're thrilled to have won the AA Holiday Park of the Year." Simon Palethorpe, CEO at Haven, added, "Across the country, our focus is always on giving our holiday makers and holiday homeowners the best possible time on our parks. I'm proud that our efforts at Hopton have been recognised for such a prestigious award. My congratulations to our team members at the park, who have done so much to earn it. This year we spent £160 million investing in our parks, giving our guests more of what they love, and we'll continue that investment, including at Hopton, in 2026.
A move to improve bus services in Yarmouth as part of a multi-million pound project has been praised by a transport group. Norfolk County Council announced that some bus services from Great Yarmouth can now expect more frequent journeys after it secured nearly £16 million in funding to improve overall services. This included additional journeys for First Buses 1 and 1A service on the coastal Clipper route, as well as the number 7 service between Great Yarmouth and Norwich. For East Norfolk Transport Users Association, a public transport group, this has been a welcome change after years of campaigning. A spokesman for the group said, "We welcome the service improvements being made by First on local bus routes 1, 1A, 7 and 8. We've campaigned for years for a bus operating via Caister, Flegborough, Filby, onto Acle and then Norwich. It has proved popular enough to now be operating every 2 hours Monday to Saturday, giving more travel opportunities for work, leisure or shopping. These changes have been made as part of Norfolk Bus Services Improvement Plan after the Council was handed a £15.9 million boost from the Department for Transport a year ago."
A new emergency unit has opened at the James Paget Hospital. The facility, known as the Same Day Emergency Care or SDEC unit, has already seen more than 450 patients at the hospital in Galston. SDEC is a service that provides emergency medical care and treatment to patients without the need for hospital admission. It allows them to be assessed, diagnosed and treated on the same day they arrive. A spokesperson for the hospital said, "Thank you to all staff and patients that have been involved in supporting the transition to the new SDEC facility and provided feedback as we moved to this new way of providing emergency care." The unit was officially opened by Lady Dannett, Lord Lieutenant of Norfolk, with colleagues from the hospital's executive and divisional leadership and operational staff. There were also representatives from partner organisations in Norfolk and Waveney's integrated care system, including East Coast Community Health Care, East of England Ambulance Trust and Norfolk and Waveney ICB.
Little bit of local politics now, and the newly picked Liberal Democrat candidate in the race to become Norfolk and Suffolk's first ever mayor has said he will take on Reform UK and win. Beccles-born Kevin Keeble, yes, it's that man again, won the Liberal Democratic selection contest by a landslide, earning more than double the first preference votes of his nearest rival from local members. 62-year-old Kevin, who lives near Norwich, said he wanted to stop Reform UK from, quote, tearing this place apart with division and despair. He started his career as an engineering apprentice in Great Yarmouth at 16 and has been chairman of the East of England Energy Group, the region's industry association for energy, since 2023. He previously founded Oilenium, a company that provides training services to oil and gas firms. "This corner of England is more than my home," he said. "It's my story. It's where I learned to work, to play and to build things that last." He said his campaign for a thriving Norfolk and Suffolk was for everyone, and that was based on four priorities. He pledged to make Norfolk and Suffolk a global clean energy superpower, creating thousands of high-skilled, well-paid jobs. He said he would launch a low-fare, low-carbon rural bus network and would transform education and training to help Norfolk and Suffolk people thrive. And he said he would protect the counties by ending sewage spills and defending the coasts and protecting the natural environment. He commented, "Everywhere I go, people tell me the same thing. They feel ignored. London makes the decisions, Westminster takes the credit, and we're left picking up the pieces. This mayoral election is our chance to take power back and put it where it belongs, right here in the heart of Norfolk and Suffolk. The creation of a mayor for Norfolk and Suffolk is a key part of the devolution deal for both counties." Sounds like Mr. Keeble's going to be even busier than we first thought.
A towering Cold War radar dish is turning heads once more as it undergoes its first professional restoration in over 30 years. The 100-foot T-84 radar antenna at RAF Nettleshead is being brought back to life with its original army green and eggshell blue colours re-emerging, along with RAF squadron markings and engineering stamps. The restoration is part of preparations for the site's upcoming public bunker opening and Searching for Home exhibition, which launches on Thursday, November the 14th. William Sacchetti, owner of the RAF Nettleshead bunker, said, "You can actually see people doing double takes as they drive past. We've cleared one section and it's brilliant army green and eggshell blue underneath. People had forgotten what it originally looked like. It's like discovering a hidden monument." The T-84 radar played a vital role in defending Norfolk's skies during the Cold War, and the restoration project has been underway for nearly 3 years. Work includes high-pressure washing, specialist metalwork treatment and hand-cleaning of delicate components. A team of computer modellers also created a digital replica to plan the restoration and identify materials. Mr. Sacchetti said, "Some parts are cleaned with special chemicals that remove grease or grime, while other parts need a more abrasive technique like sandblasting to strip away rust safely. He has even managed to reactivate parts of the radar system, with plans to demonstrate the antenna during the Remembrance exhibition." Project curator Anya Vero said, "We're literally peeling back layers of history. Each section we clean reveals another chapter. By Remembrance weekend, visitors will see this magnificent machine as the RAF operators saw it, a pristine, powerful symbol of defence and dedication." The restoration is being privately funded by Mr. Sacchetti. "This radar protected Norfolk," he said. "Now Norfolk should see it in its full glory."
And while one attraction is being reinvented, sadly another one has come to the end of its days. A popular rally that lets guests take a spin in steam engines has been axed after 33 years. The Strumpshaw Steam Rally, which sees around 40 large steam engines from the 19th and earliest 20th century on display, will not return next May. Visitors were able to climb behind the wheel of an engine and take it for a spin at the event. Organisers claim they were forced to cancel as, quote, "the cost of staging the rally has increased markedly since the COVID pandemic and continues to do so." The event, which was held at Strumpshaw Hall, has also lost land due to veteran trees having to be fenced off. A need for increased administration and the cost of VAT were also cited as reasons why putting on the event has become unviable. The organisers added, "The museum would like to sincerely thank the organisers, volunteers, suppliers, caterers, traders, exhibitors, public visitors and everybody else who have contributed to the event over so many years. Thank you all for your support and we hope you will all remember the Strumpshaw Steam Rally very fondly."
More positive news for another local attraction. A local museum has been recognised for inspiring young people to engage with the Broads. The Time and Tide Museum in Great Yarmouth will be presented with the Lady May Hughes Trophy by the Broads Society, along with a £250 prize. The museum impressed the society with its imaginative education programmes and commitment to connecting local communities with the Broads heritage through engaging exhibitions and activities. Mark Collins, chair of the Broads Society, said, "The Lady Mayhew's trophy celebrates those who go above and beyond to share the magic of the Broads. Time and Tide Museum's work with young people is exactly the kind of partnership we want to champion, one that connects history, environment and community in a way that truly brings the Broads to life." Time and Tide Museum is part of Kick the Dust, a Norfolk Museums service programme that provides young people with opportunities to get involved with museums and heritage. Most recently, participants in Kick the Dust collaborated with an artist to design posters encouraging people to enjoy the distinctive natural environments of the Norfolk Broads.
A Norfolk firm is holding an event within 24 hours of the upcoming autumn budget to unpack the Chancellor's key announcements affecting businesses. Norwich-based financial services experts Chadwicks are teaming up with the East of England Energy Group to shed light on the budget statement, which will be delivered by the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, on November the 26th. The event will take place in the morning after the announcement at Great Yarmouth Town Hall from 8:30 to 11 a.m. on November the 27th. Chadwick's analysis will spotlight the measures most relevant to entrepreneurs, company directors and family business owners, including new tax rules and regulatory updates, potential challenges for succession and wealth planning, and changes to inheritance tax around business assets and pensions. It will also explore the practical steps people can take to protect their business and personal wealth, covering strategies to reduce tax liabilities, succession planning that works for families and firms, and estate structuring for long-term resilience. Entry is free for EEEGR members, and non-members can attend for £10.
A new bakery running a click-and-collect service for sweet and savoury treats has launched in a Norfolk village. Wren Micro Bakery has started taking orders for baked goods in Ashmanor, near Wroxham. Customers can place orders weekly before heading to pick them up at the weekend. Annie Naylor Clements, who owns the business, said, "I love promoting simple eating and Norfolk produce and was looking for something creative to do. I've been baking since I was very small, and one of my earliest memories is baking in my childminder's kitchen. I'm excited. The soft launch last week went well, and I had such good feedback. I'm still a bit nervous, though." The bakery works with customers able to place an order between Tuesday and Thursday, before picking it up from a disclosed address on Saturday. Mrs. Naylor Clements explained, "It is more accessible and fully customisable for allergens to do it this way. There is also less pressure for me, as I know exactly how much I need to bake in order to limit waste. I suppose it's a click-and-collect service for tasty snacks. The menu will change weekly depending on the seasonal produce that Mrs. Naylor Clements can source." She explained, "All of my flour and main produce is from Norfolk or wider East Anglia. Provenance is super important to me, and I do believe that if you eat well, you feel well. This week, customers have the choice of ordering apple pie Chelsea buns, made with apples from her 125-year-old apple tree, and topped with an indulgent cream cheese frosting. There will also be gooey chocolate chip cookies, fudgy brownies and focaccia bread made with herbs from the garden." Mrs. Naylor Clements has plans to launch the company as a social enterprise with free workshops for those on a lower income. She added, "My current goal is to feed people and make them happy, but I'd love something good to come of it." Sweets for my sweet, sugar for my honey.
Chase that bright star nightly.
The Searchers there, singing about the sweet things. More of the meaty stories of the week in just a while, after a rundown of the briefer offerings.
And now some news in brief. And a crash between a motorbike and a pickup truck has prompted a police investigation. The incident happened just before 1 p.m. last Tuesday on the A47 at Blowfield. The red Isuzu pickup collided with a black Honda 125 motorcycle, and the motorcyclist, a man in his 20s, suffered minor injuries. Officers are now keen to speak to anyone who may have witnessed the collision or have any relevant dashcam footage. And on a similar subject, a teen was taken to hospital after suffering serious injuries in a crash. It happened on the A146 at Stockton near Beccles, just before 5:30 p.m. on Friday, when a grey Nissan collided with a silver Honda CBF 125 motorbike. The road was closed for several hours while emergency services attended. It reopened around 8 p.m. and the biker, a male in his late teens, was taken to hospital. Again, police are now appealing for anyone who witnessed the collision or captured relevant dashcam footage to come forward. And still on the accident theme, a child is in hospital after being hit by a van in Caister Village. The incident happened at about 8:40 a.m. on Tuesday in Allendale Road. A police spokeswoman has confirmed that a child was taken to hospital. The extent of their injuries remains unknown at the time of recording, but the East of England Ambulance Service was contacted for comment.
A Diwali-inspired community event featuring Asian dancing, drumming and light displays is set to take place in Great Yarmouth this weekend. The Barracks Luminara, organised by Freshly Grated, in partnership with the Vedic Cultural Society of East Anglia, will be held at the Barrack Estate on Saturday. This free event aims to unite people in a night of cultural exchange and community spirit. Freshly Grated's programme manager, Maddie Snowden, said, "The Barracks Luminara will be a wonderful cross-cultural celebration of fire and light, bringing communities together as the warm colours of autumn surround us and winter draws in." A retired packaging developer died at his home after sustaining a fatal head injury during a fall. An inquest into the death of Anthony Overill of Seafield Road North in Caister was opened at Norfolk Coroner's Court this week. It heard that the 86-year-old was found on November the 2nd at his home by a friend, who later identified him to an officer from Norfolk Police. The court also heard that Mr. Overill was a retired packaging developer who was born in Yarmouth on January the 24th, 1936. His provisional primary medical cause of death was given as subdural and subarachnoid hematoma due to a fall and head injuries. A full inquest to determine the official cause of death will take place at the court on November the 12th. And finally, a popular Channel 4 programme is looking for people from Norfolk to take part in its new series. Location, 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 hosted by property experts Kirsty Allsop and Phil Spencer, wants to hear from house hunters in and around Norfolk. The show, which first aired in 2000, follows Allsop and Spencer as they try to find the perfect home for a different set of buyers each week. It has been filmed in the county on several occasions, and now producers want people in Norfolk who are either first-time buyers, those downsizing or even relocating to get in touch ahead of filming next year.
OK, Grapevine Extra coming up straight after Alison and Andrew get you completely up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
Businesses in Great Yarmouth have been forced to put up their prices, cut staff and reduce hours despite an upturn in tourist spending in the seaside town last year. Firms continue to grapple with rising costs, with a new survey revealing that most have increased prices by up to 10%, slashed jobs and are holding back on investment. Tourism injected £700 million into Great Yarmouth's economy last year, with its 7.5 million visitors spending 10% more than they did in 2023. But despite holidaymakers and day trippers splashing more cash, the latest survey by Visit Great Yarmouth paints a picture of uncertainty among businesses struggling with rising costs. Employers are urging the government to ease the pressure on firms by reducing crippling energy, fuel and staff costs. They are calling for Rachel Reeves to introduce an energy price cap alongside business rates and PAYE relief in her upcoming autumn budget in a few weeks' time. Business owners also want to see cuts to VAT on tourism and hospitality and an increase in the VAT threshold. Visit Great Yarmouth Chief Executive Asa Morrison said these are challenging times for businesses. Businesses are having to make some very tough choices because of external pressure in terms of opening hours, staff numbers, and are delaying investment in their businesses and favour interventions that support them to continue their offer to visitors, he said. Our members are constantly analysing and refreshing their offer while maintaining the formula that appeals to visitors and entices them back time and time again. Tourism accounts for 40% of local employment in Great Yarmouth, with more than 10,000 full-time jobs in the sector. The town attracted more than 7.4 million visitors last year, who spent £528 million with local businesses. That's averaging £44 million every month.
A 95-year-old queen of knitting has hit a remarkable milestone in her creative fundraising mission. Margaret Seaman has gained attention from global media with her detailed knitted creations, including replicas of Sandringham Estate and Great Yarmouth Seafront, and she even won a private audience with the Queen. In 2022, she was awarded a British Empire Medal after raising thousands of pounds for charities with her work. And now, the great-grandmother from Caister has celebrated a major achievement in her amazing knitting career as a fundraiser. Mrs. Seaman has raised £30,000 for the new Cambridge Children's Hospital, which will be the first specialist children's hospital in the east of England. Talking of her achievements, she said, "My knitting projects over the last 10 years have taken me and my daughter Tricia on so many adventures, but my focus has always been on charity fundraising for children. That's why I started knitting exhibition pieces in the first place and why I'm still knitting. When I started, I never dreamed all this would happen, and I never dared hope we would be able to raise so much money. Funds from her efforts will go to Addenbrooke's Charitable Trust, or ACT, the official hospital charity for Addenbrooke's, which celebrates its 30th birthday this year. Emily Wildig, Community Relationships Manager at ACT, said, "Margaret Seaman is incredibly inspiring. Her remarkable knitted creations have captured hearts and raised vital funds for Cambridge Children's Hospital. Her dedication, creativity and generosity are truly extraordinary, and we are so grateful for all she continues to do. Spread over 6 floors, the new hospital will include 108 inpatient beds, 16 paediatric intensive care beds, 42 day case beds, 7 operating theatres, imaging and diagnostics, and a hospital school. It will also be the first in the world to fully integrate treatment of children's mental and physical health alongside world-leading research."
The Galston Seafront Cafe has been transformed with a new and colourful look, inspired by the golden age of seaside holidays. The Seabreeze Cafe has said goodbye to its white exterior and welcomed a multitude of colours in a large postcard mural. From a sandcastle, bucket and spade to a kite and dog, the design pays homage to Goulston as a seaside destination to, quote, make memories, while mimicking a traditional postcard. The work was completed by the Represent Project, a Great Yarmouth-based community art organisation, with more than 40 people helping to complete the mural over a span of 2 weeks, and the main artist was Flip. Reuben Cruz of the Represent Project said, I'm really pleased with it. We need to do more work in Goulston, and it's about bringing pride to the place. The mural was in collaboration with Walk and Talk EA, a men's mental health support group. In a post on social media, it said, this mural is all about families making memories, with a special focus on fathers and their children. It's celebrating how dads play an important role in their children's lives and how creating memories together is one of life's most precious gifts. The Sea Breeze Cafe is the latest addition to the organisation's ongoing Street Gallery Walls series, with this year's focus on postcard murals. Mr. Cruz said, they are inspired by the golden age of seaside holidays and the tradition of sending postcards home. These new works invite residents and visitors to take photos and share them on social media, helping to promote the town and strengthen local pride. One of the other artworks is on the outside wall of the King's Arms pub to celebrate the heritage of Northgate Street area in Great Yarmouth, with reference to the nurses of Northgate Hospital during the Second World War and the towering town's Minster Church. Last year, the group also completed the Fabric community-led mural inside the Minster with more than 80 volunteers. Yeah, they do some really good work. Well done, them.
Here's something different. A naughty star is coming to Norfolk with a show promising pop, passion and pecs. Great Yarmouth Britannia Pier will host Boy Band in the Buff, a throwback concert featuring the biggest hits of the 90s and noughties. Pop, heartthrob and pop idol runner-up Gareth Gates will be joined on stage by a cast of ripped and ridiculously talented performers on June the 20th, 2026. From 7:30 p.m, ticket holders are in for a night of harmonies, dance moves and a whole lot of skin, while the cast belts out some of the biggest boy band hits of the turn of the century, including tunes from the Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, Blue and Take That. Event organisers said it's a celebration of pop, passion and pecs, where the clothes come off and the heat turns up. This is the ultimate night out for anyone who's ever swooned over a boy band. Ticket holders are warned that the show contains tight harmonies and tighter pants. A pre-show VIP meet and greet will be held with Gates from 6 p.m. Tickets start at £35.
I can only follow those stars with news of a Starbucks, really. A new jobs look set to be created as a drive-through Starbucks coffee shop is unveiled in the Bradwell Village. The national chain looks set to soon be serving up after plans were given the go-ahead by council planners. The site is part of a retail centre on the Persimmon Homes development Bluebell Meadow, which, when completed, will have 850 houses. The bid to open a new Starbucks, along with the provision of parking, circulation space, landscaping and associated works, divided opinion among neighbours. It attracted 5 objections, citing concerns about extra traffic and litter, and 5 letters of support, highlighting employment and economic benefit. With an amended site plan lodged by the applicant during the application process, plans have been approved under delegated council powers. It means Starbucks will be joining Sainsbury's, Subway, Instavolt, Rumble's Chip Shop and Golden Scissors Barbers, which have been trading there for more than a year. The proposals for Starbucks included jobs for 8 full-time and 12 part-time employees. A delegated report from the council's case officer said proposals sought permission for a, quote, drive-through cafe identified as a Starbucks unit, and that forms phase two of the Bradwell local centre. It concluded, the proposal is considered acceptable overall in terms of principle, design, amenity, biodiversity, flood risk and highways, and is therefore recommended for approval subject to conditions.
Families across Norfolk and Suffolk are in for a festive treat this December as Santa's Christmas show embarks on a regional tour. The immersive Santa Mime promises to bring the magic of the North Pole and Santa's workshop to life, featuring a cast of colourful characters. Packed with festive songs, comedy and audience participation, the hour-long show is designed to entertain both children and adults. After each performance, youngsters will have the chance to meet Santa in a special meet-and-greet session. The tour begins at Britannia Pier, Great Yarmouth, on Saturday, followed by a tour around Norfolk and North Suffolk. Final performances take place at Southwold Arts Centre on Tuesday the 23rd of December and Wednesday the 24th of December. Each child ticket includes a very special limited edition gift, and children can even deliver their Christmas letters directly to Santa by hand. A statement from organisers said, "Families will meet an unforgettable cast of characters, including the Christmas-loving elves Jingle and Jangle, the mischievous Mrs. Tinsel, and a special appearance by Rudolph. Of course, the star of the show is the big man himself, Santa Claus. Families are encouraged to wear their best Christmas jumpers and prepare for the ultimate festive experience. With shows scheduled right up until Christmas Eve, Santa's Christmas show offers the perfect opportunity to create magical Christmas memories that will last a lifetime. For tickets and further information, visit santashow, all one word, .co.uk.
And East Norfolk Scouts have launched new groups in response to growing demand from young people seeking less screen time and more green time. New sections have opened both in Freethorpe and Bury St Peter, offering outdoor activities and skills for children and teenagers. The newly formed First Freethorpe Scout Group now includes Beavers, which are aged 6 to 8, Cubs 8 to 10, and Scouts 10 to 14. Meanwhile, the First Bury St Peter and Raveningham Group has launched a Sea Scout Troop for young people aged 10 to 14. New recruits have already taken part in activities such as tomahawk throwing. They didn't do that when I was in the Scouts. Target sports, sailing and camping at Decoy Broad. Shelley, East Norfolk Scouts lead volunteer, said, "There are also opportunities for adults to join in the fun. To be a volunteer in Scouts, you don't need incredible outdoor skills. We can teach you all that. What's really needed is a smile, patience and willingness to share a little time to help others." The First Freethorpe Scout Group and the First Bury St Peter and Raveningham Sea Scouts meet at Freethorpe and Bury St Peter Village Halls respectively. For more information, contact Shelley at dc@eastnorfolkscouts.org.uk.
A woman has been sentenced after she stole products worth hundreds of pounds. Danielle Masson, aged 44, of no fixed address, appeared at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on Monday, charged with 6 counts of theft from a shop and 5 counts of breaching a previously court-issued criminal behaviour order. A further 20 offences of theft were taken into consideration by the courts. The 6 charged incidents happened in Galston and Great Yarmouth between August the 31st and November the 1st this year. Masson entered shops located in Beresford Road, Lowestoft Road and Magdalen Way and stole hundreds of pounds worth of confectionery, coffee, meat, cheese and laundry products. Officers arrested Masson on Saturday and took her to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning, where she was later charged and remanded to court. During her appearance at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on Monday, she was handed a 12-week prison sentence, suspended for 12 months. She was also ordered to pay £75 in compensation. "We continue to collaborate closely with our retail partners, actively enforce existing criminal behaviour orders and ensure offenders are brought before the courts."
And staying with crime, a man who repeatedly stole from the same BP filling station has been accused of having an imitation gun in the boot of his car. Daniel Bundy, aged 37, targeted the garage and M&S food store off the A47 at Acol on 13 separate occasions in September and October, stealing items including alcohol and food. Norwich Magistrates Court was told he had also deliberately reversed his car into the manager on the petrol forecourt as he tried to prevent him leaving after recognising him from CCTV footage. When he was arrested on October the 30th, police found a Turkish-made imitation pistol in the boot of his car. Josephine Jones, prosecuting, told the court it was alleged the gun was a type the National Crime Agency had warned could be converted into a viable firearm. Bundy of Bevan Street in Lowestoft pleaded guilty to a series of thefts, assault and drink driving. He was ordered to pay fines, costs and compensation totalling £1,444 and banned from driving for 40 months. He did not enter a plea to possession of an imitation firearm, with that case committed to Norwich Crown Court for a hearing on November the 28th.
A high-risk paedophile attempted to groom a teenage girl while living rough in a tent in Great Yarmouth. John Richards, aged 47, had been homeless on the streets of the town without informing police of his whereabouts when he attempted to communicate with a 13-year-old. As a registered sex offender, Richards, previously of Northampton, was bound by a number of conditions upon his release from prison and was also meant to be subject to regular unannounced visits from police officers. Appearing at Norwich Magistrates Court, he pleaded guilty to intentional attempted communication with a child for sexual gratification between September the 8th and the 24th. He also admitted breaching a Sexual Harm Prevention Order, or SHPO. Sally Harris, prosecuting, said he had been living in a tent in Great Yarmouth and moving around regularly, making it very difficult for police to track him. She said he had an extensive history of sexual offences, including regular breaches of his SHPO and of engaging with young, vulnerable girls. Magistrates said his offences were too serious for their powers and committed him to be sentenced at Norwich Crown Court on December the 8th. No bail application was made, and he was remanded to remain in prison until that date. Annette Hall, mitigating, said he recognises the very serious nature of these offences and he has no permanent address to offer for bail. In 2022, Richards was convicted of three attempted SHPO breaches, two counts of attempting to engage in sexual communication with a child and one count of making an indecent photograph of a child. He was jailed at Northampton Crown Court for 3 years. At the time, the Northamptonshire Police Offender Manager said, "Richards is a high-risk sex offender, so I am really pleased to see him back behind bars, away from children."
And a teenager has pleaded guilty to assault following a violent incident in a normally quiet neighbourhood. Ellis Woodward, aged 18, from Repsworth Bastwick, appeared at Norwich Crown Court and pleaded guilty to grievous bodily harm. The incident happened on North Deans Road in Great Yarmouth in the early hours of June the 26th and saw the victim, another teenage boy, injured with a cut to the face which required surgery. After the assault, four men were detained on suspicion of grievous bodily harm. The community was left in shock after the incident, with a man woken up in the middle of the night after he heard screaming. One long-time neighbour said it was normally a quiet part of the town. On the following morning, a police cordon remained in place and a forensics tent was erected at the scene. At the time, police said all those involved are believed to be known to each other. Woodward is next due at Norwich Crown Court on December the 3rd, and the other three men have been released without charge.
Following up on a story from last week, the man who bit a pub landlady, who tried to stop him drink driving, has been spared jail. Wayne Ellis, who has 35 previous convictions for 110 offences, attacked the woman in the car park of her pub, The Feathers, in Galston. Norwich Crown Court heard bar staff at the High Street venue had already refused to serve him more alcohol because he was so drunk. When he went outside with his girlfriend, the 54-year-old was followed by the landlady, who stopped him getting into his car before he bit her. Danielle O'Donovan, prosecuting, said the victim's public service had been to try and prevent him drinking. Ellis of Nuffield Close Galston appeared in court on Wednesday for sentencing, having been found guilty of one count of assault occasioning actual bodily harm following a trial in September. He was cleared of a second count of assault occasioning actual bodily harm relating to her son in connection with the same incident in the early hours of July the 8th, 2023. Recorder Ruth Brander said Ellis had wholly misinterpreted the situation and delivered a nasty bite to the victim as part of the assault on her. imposing a 12-month custodial sentence, suspended for 18 months. Recorder Brander said she acknowledged Ellis had now stopped drinking, a major factor in the attack, and had not offended since 2018, before the attack. She said she had been persuaded to suspend the sentence because of the efforts Ellis had taken to, quote, change the course of his life. Ellis was also ordered to complete 10 days rehabilitation activity requirement, 150 hours unpaid work, and abide by an electronically monitored curfew for 6 months between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. He was also ordered to pay £200 compensation to the victim.
Well, that's all for the news this week. So, welcome to Grapevine Extra. This week we have Dr. Livingstone, we presume, followed by the story of the UK's Remembrance Day. First off, Andrew is in the jungle.
I thought I'd bring you a story from this day in November. It actually occurred on the 10th of November, but I think you'll be interested in this one. It's often surrounded by a little bit of fiction, maybe, this story. Some people don't believe it happened, but it obviously gave rise to one of the most famous sayings that that we have. A man was seated on a mat in his small mud hut in the small town of Ujiji, on the shores of Lake Tanganyika in Africa, when he was lured outside by an unusual commotion. Crowds of people had gathered round a new white visitor, who was carrying an assortment of goods, including the American flag. The man pushed through the crowd and walked towards the visitor with a firm and heavy tread. He was tall, tanned, covered in dust, but had a well-polished hat. The visitor made his way forward and addressed the man. Dr. Livingstone, I presume. On this day in 1871, the explorer Henry Morton Stanley found the missing explorer, Dr. David Livingstone, the only white man for miles, pale, confused, and evidently unwell, after he had vanished for 5 years lost in Africa. 2 years previously, in 1869, the New York Herald had sent Henry Morton Stanley to find Livingstone. Since the mid-century, the missionary explorer Dr. Livingstone had sought routes to spread Christianity into the heart of Africa. During his exploration, he pushed east along the Zambezi River, part of a fleet of exploring canoes led by guides from the Makololo tribe. Near where the modern-day border has been drawn between Zimbabwe and Zambia, Livingstone discovered an astonishing waterfall, which he renamed in honour of the Queen, the Victoria Falls. The furthest that Livingstone reached north was north of Lake Tanganyika, before he lost contact with the outside world. As he waited for a response from Livingstone, Stanley observed that the man was fragile. Then Livingstone suddenly replied, "Yes." And then he said, "I feel thankful that I'm here to welcome you."
We'll be right back.
Zambezi from Eddie Calvert, the man with the golden trumpet, as he was billed in the 1950s and early 60s. Alison now with the history of our National Remembrance Day.
And as we know, the 11th of November is Remembrance Day. This year, 2025, has marked 80 years since the end of the Second World War, with the 8th of May being the anniversary of VE Day and the 15th of August, VJ Day. Annual services of remembrance will take place this coming weekend, with the customary festival at the Royal Albert Hall in London on Saturday evening, and nationwide services at war memorials, the largest being at the Cenotaph in Whitehall on Sunday morning. Perhaps you've already bought a poppy to wear on your coat for the occasion. Looking into the background of this well-known time of year, the Royal British Legion, the organisation which supports veterans of the armed forces, first adopted the poppy as a symbol of remembrance and the hope for a peaceful future in 1921. The choice of the poppy was originally inspired by a poem called In Flanders Fields, written in 1915 by a Canadian doctor, John McCrae, who had lost a friend at Ypres. McCrae was inspired by the fact that poppies continued to flourish in a landscape that had been turned to mud and devastation by the trench fighting. In Flanders Fields the poppies blow, between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky the larks, still bravely singing, fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. The first poppies were made of silk or cotton, with wire for the stem and bitumen to form the hard centre. Over the years they've been made from cardboard and felt, with the bitumen centre and wire stem being replaced by plastic in the 1960s. At this time, the poppy also gained a green leaf. Since 2023, however, there has been a major change, with poppies being made entirely of paper, created from renewable fibres, including offcuts from paper coffee cups. This means that poppies are now plastic-free and they can be recycled at home. And where are our local war memorials? In Great Yarmouth, there are two in St George's Park. The first was erected in 1922 and is a tall obelisk with 23 name panels showing the names of 1,472 people, along with the inscription, "They gave their all." The second one was dedicated in 1949 and is shaped like a wall with arms extending at each end. It has 22 panels inscribed with the names of 619 service personnel and 162 civilians who lost their lives in the Second World War. In addition to these memorials, there is another one to those who served in the war in the Far East. It is on the seafront, opposite St Peter's Road, and is a four-sided clock tower showing a circular bronze map of Southeast Asia. In Acle and Winterton, there are war memorials in the churchyards. In Galston, there is one in the old cemetery, whilst in Caister, there is one in the church. Almost every parish in the county and across the country contains a war memorial of some sort. They are mostly unobtrusive stone plinths or pillars, which we probably pass most days and cease to notice. However, in an age where war seems ever more terrifying, it seems that the need to remember those who have lost their lives in conflict will continue far into the future.
Thank you.
Well, that's all for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week's news readers will be Desney and Andrew. So, we hope that we can look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope you stay safe and well. So from everyone here at Grapevine, it's bye for now.